Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Does that sound a little weird to you?
Sounds just a little hot.
Hot?
I always sound hot.
Well, yeah, that's fine. Okay. Anyway, we are here, and you are there. Unless, of course, you think you are here.
Yeah, from the perspective of them, they think they are here and we are there.
Well, you know, that could be purely relative.
I hope not.
It could be a theory of relativity if we could work it up. Difference between here and there. I mean, everywhere I go, I've noticed, is always here.
Everywhere you go, there you are.
No, but because I'm not there. When I get there, I'm here.
You can't be. I'm here.
No.
You're there.
Yeah, well, I'm at the center of the universe. I could prove it.
Well, we are the Personal Wealth Coach.
We are?
As strange as that may seem.
And I'm Jeff, and this guy over here wearing plaid is Jake.
Yes.
And
that guy, Jeff wearing plain over there. That's an easy way to tell us apart.
And we have not quit our day jobs. Our day jobs are providing investment advice and management to people with investment portfolios. Well, actually, to the portfolios. In sort of, we don't actually provide it to the people as much as we do to the portfolios.
Well, we do provide it to the people, and then the portfolios get affected.
Yeah, we make the portfolios get older, man age.
We manage them.
Yeah,
yes.
We make them age. Anyway, we are actually two of the two managing members of a firm called technically the Wealth Coach LLC.
We go by the Personal Wealth Coach.
It's our DBA, which is one of those interesting little business things. And we are registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. If you would like to check us out, you're welcome to go to the SEC website and wander around through their labyrinth until you go either insane or find our information.
Or if they go insane the way we did, then they'll just start the business doing what we do.
I should warn you, though,
around.
It takes 30 years, so it literally took us 30 years to get to the position where we were able to do this, and that's really weird. Anyway, this also is a radio program, in case you didn't know that. I mean, the fact that the sound is coming over a radio, well, they could be listening on their computer or something.
It's true. Some people do that.
So myktem.com. is where you can listen to these things. If you are, then you are, and if you're not, then you aren't.
Don't you
love that?
Very firm grasp of the obvious.
Well, that's what I get paid for.
You have your toes firmly planted in reality.
We're sort of consultants, we are consultants, and that's what consultants do. They, you know, you pay a consultant to reach over and take you by the wrist and show you your own watch and read the time to you.
Yes, tell you to do what you already know what to do.
And then tell you that'll be $10,000.
Right.
Well, actually,
no, I don't even wear a watch anymore.
You don't?
No.
No.
I have a phone for that.
You have a U-phone?
It's a pocket watch, if you think about it in that sense.
Wow. I guess that's right. You keep it in your pocket?
Yes, it's literally in my pocket. I don't have a little pocket watch pocket for it. It's my normal pocket. But, you know, we've gone back in time to that time in history where we carry our watches in our pocket now.
And it's really very much the Dick Tracy television watch thing where we can actually watch TV on our watches then.
Yeah.
That's why they're called watches.
It's true. We can. We can talk to each other on them.
Yes.
This is Dick Tracy's reality.
Yeah.
Only the screen's bigger than Dick Tracy.
Only my chin is not quite as sharp as Dick Tracy's.
No, and you don't have that swell cleft.
Yeah. Swell cleft.
Yes, you have to have a swell cleft in your chin.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is a radio program, and if you'd like to call in here and ask us any questions or make any comments about the economy or the socioeconomic system in which we live, minus professional sports, an area which we know
very
less.
Little.
We actually
very
know
little.
Less than nothing. What we do know about professional sports is probably inaccurate, so that's knowing less than nothing. We have negative knowledge about
negative
that.
Knowledge.
Yeah, you can call us at either 773-1400 from a line in East Bell County or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
I love that. That you say that.
I don't know how else to say it.
Well, it's a cliche.
Whose cliche?
I don't know.
I know that Shakespeare fellow, he's always talking in cliche.
He had a lot of those, there's no doubt about it.
I think he'd be failed out of any English literature class these days. Plagiarism.
Oh, he would fail because this is what's funny. It's a pretty good size. Something like some significant percentage, like I think it was around 9% of the commonly used English words today, he made up out of whole cloth.
Yeah, I don't think it was 9%, but it was a large number. Yes,
maybe it's 0.9% or something. But anyway, there's a lot of words that we use today that we think are just standard English that we don't think anything about.
Like, and I don't have anything that rhymes with that.
They rhymed with something.
This doesn't rhyme with anything, and so I'm going to make up a word.
I like that.
And there were no dictionaries around at the time, so they went, oh, I just guess I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, and then Sam Johnson screwed it up.
Yeah, he had to go and list all the words. Dictionary. Now we can't just make them up as we go along anymore.
He just arbitrarily spelled some of them in sort of a Welsh, like, ought, O-U-G-H-T.
Why?
Why?
Why? That's another W-H-Y.
Now, that's a why. I can get that. But, like, ought and thought. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, Rick and Salado.
Hello, Rick.
Rick Von Salado.
Hey, you say Salado, I say Salado.
Whatever.
I say potato.
Soros. He's a sore guy, right?
Pardon me?
Soros,
yes.
Soros.
First name Soros.
George.
Jorge.
George.
You know he made up that last name? Speaking of made up words.
Is it made up?
Yep. It is spelled the same way forward and backwards. His father made that up together.
Oh, okay. So what do they call that? Kind of a anagram or something like that?
There's a word for it, but I never can remember what it is.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
This guy makes $1 billion off of sitting on his keister.
Palindrome.
Palindrome. Yeah, it's a palindrome.
Yes. So he's making billions of dollars sitting on his keister. Well, that's you know more about his body posture than I do as
I
he's
know.
Making money.
I don't know. That's what we do. We don't make billions, but we do.
When were you sitting on George Soros's keister?
I sit on my keister. Actually, I sit on my desk chair.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, now, you were asking a question.
What were you commenting about Herr Soros?
I was just wondering, you run through that scenario, how he makes all that money with a B.
With what?
With a B. Money with a B, yes.
He has a B?
The B-illions, yes, B-illion.
He raises bees, obviously.
Evidently.
Well, now, he's just, the bottom line to it is, his father was Greek, right?
He was not. He's Hungarian.
Hungarian.
Yes.
He did some big... His father did some big stuff, and he did some big stuff, and he took advantage of this change from a communist to a capitalist government at the appropriate moment, and he became very, very wealthy and came to the United States.
I'll tell you how he won his most recent set of billions.
I'd like to listen to that.
Okay.
Manipulating commodities.
It is a very specific type of commodity.
The British pound.
No.
No, gold. Oh, yeah.
He has been selling gold hand over fist.
Recently, yes.
The countries.
Which means everybody else should be buying gold, right?
Right, because obviously he's making so much money doing it that we should, wait a minute. Hey, I think we shouldn't be doing the opposite of what he's doing if we think he is actually making money doing it.
Glenn Beck, the last year he was on Fox, which was, 2011? Anyway... In the last 12 months he was on Fox, he made $23 million, and Fox didn't pay him $23 million.
What? They don't pay
public hire. He is millions. He makes several million dollars a year. I don't know how many. I was trying to find that out, and it was obviously he is busy ducking and dodging from that issue. But he makes his millions not from Newsmax. He does not make a profit on Newsmax. He makes his profit from selling gold. Now, here's the issue. This is one of the reasons we've been so much against the purchase of gold. If a lot of really, really wealthy people are making their money by selling gold to the public...
It's probably not a good idea to go against the professionals.
The people who, by the way, are buying the gold generally are not really, really wealthy.
Well, except for countries.
Well, I say some, people.
Yeah, people.
The people who are buying the gold are not really, really wealthy. And as a result, that's kind of one of those rules of economics that you don't find written down necessarily anywhere. When wealthy people are selling something, they generally are selling it to people who are not wealthy when they're selling a commodity. And I think it's funny. It's probably a really bad idea to be buying what successful people are selling.
Right. Well, this kind of segues nicely into one of the subjects that I wanted to bring up. There is a tiff, a tug of war between two billionaire hedge fund managers.
Really?
Are you familiar with them?
I know that I'm not sure which one you're talking about. I know that there's one that's in deep doo-doo right now.
But. Well, there's several of them in deep doo-doo, but one of them in particular is named Carl Icahn.
Is he a hedge fund manager now? I thought he was a takeover artist.
He uses a hedge fund to do it.
Oh, okay.
He is a takeover artist and has been for a long time.
We have
he's managing
hedges.
A hedge fund right now.
Okay.
And he is in a feud with another hedge fund manager over some purchase that went sour for him and well for another person that they got in together.
What was the purchase, do you know?
He had agreed to buy something from another person at a price, and then if there was, and then share 10% of the profit over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't want to share the profit, and so went to lawsuit. And these big billionaires had a lawsuit over about $1 million. It was a relatively small thing, but it sounds just like the movie Trading Places. Ackman. Is the other person in the feud. He's the young up-and-coming, where Icahn is this iconic figure.
Literally.
He's an old-school hedge fund manager. And right now they are in over Herbalife. They are having this massive contest.
That's astonishing.
Yes, and it is a publicly traded company.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would warn people about is that when people go on the offensive in a PR campaign about when they buy and sell a publicly traded company, I can almost guarantee you, I can't guarantee you because I can't read minds, but I can almost guarantee you that the SEC will be involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Ackman, who has been famously down on Herbalife, has shorted the position. He has said, I'm selling this position and I don't own it. So he's borrowed shares to sell it. Well, Icahn, who doesn't like Ackman, has just gone in close to the exercise date and bought the position up so that he says it's the greatest short squeeze in history. So he's buying Herbalife. He says he likes Herbalife. But the real reason why he's buying Herbalife is to put it to this guy that he's having an argument with, ongoing feud.
And I think your advice to the public is that when two dinosaurs are in a fight,
get out of the way.
It's probably a bad idea to try to get in the middle of it.
Yes, and in the middle of that, there is a much larger dinosaur, the U.S. government, the SEC, is looking at this the same way we are. If I can see... they're a very public feud, and say the reason why he's doing that isn't because he likes the company. He's trying to manipulate the stock so somebody else will lose money. If I can see it, the SEC can see it, and it's going to happen.
Well,
it's
one of those deals where he can honestly, if he's going in and simply purchasing the stock.
He is purchasing the stock.
And it's a legitimate purchase, and he doesn't have insider information. But he's got the right to do that.
Here's where it is. When you are purchasing enough stock that you can change the price of the stock drastically, and you're doing it in a public manner, and you're doing it even with the stated intention of hurting someone else, it's called stock manipulation. It's no longer insider trading. It is manipulating a stock for other reasons. Now, he's being very careful to say that he likes the stock. But I think the SEC has a case. I think they could take it to him. And say
they might, but they've got two or three other little things to do,
little minor things,
like the 90. Well, it was only $90,000. Was it $90,000? Which one was it? The one where the SEC froze that Swiss account.
Heinz.
Yeah.
The Heinz account. Yes, the Heinz trading.
The thing is that, and I get used to these really big money numbers, but only $90,000. What I think that's pretty neat. That's the first time they've ever moved this fast on a Swiss account. Is for those of you who missed this geeky stuff that we really follow.
Yes, we're very interested in. Everybody else is going, you guys really have no life.
An agreement was made by Berkshire, announced, but Berkshire Hathaway is purchasing Heinz.
A big chunk of it.
And it's selling itself for $23 billion.
That's kind of a large number.
Yeah. And, to Berkshire Hathaway and 3G Capital, which is a Brazilian company. So it's, you know, and the SEC very quickly, I mean, they moved the day after the trade was, after the agreement was announced, to freeze $90,000 in invested money.
$92,000.
Well, it says nearly $90,000 yes. Here in the Wall Street Journal.
2,600 contracts traded hands for a total purchase price of $92,000. Okay. This is a very round number here over
anyway,
Forbes.
The profit on that $90,000, going from the Wall Street Journal. $90,000 in options would have been $1.7 million, and they froze the whole operation immediately, which something is working correctly at the SEC. By the way, as of right now, they have no clue officially.
Who did it?
Who was trading through the Swiss account? However, they weren't real they weren't real bright about choosing their bank because it was Goldman Sachs.
Yeah,
it's GS Switzerland, which is Goldman Sachs, which is a U.S. corporation. So the SEC can go to the U.S. home base and freeze that account. I would venture to say that whoever made those purchases should be a little bit on the nervous side right now. That's just my guess. You
know? The trading volume the day before the announcement was 1,700% less than the day of the announcement. It was really easy to track a major purchase in options on the day before because there weren't a lot of shares sold.
As that account was not in the habit of had previously had no dealings in that stock. Anyway.
The computers are working in that sense anyway. They're catching things like this.
They're saying the articles I'm reading are saying they were alerted. They had to have been alerted in advance because they had all the legal documents prepared in advance and they were ready to jump on it. So if you ever got an itch out there that you heard something from your brother-in-law or your cousin or whatever that some company is about to be bought by some other company or something like that, trading on that information is illegal.
Very
and,
illegal.
And this is really, it really surprises.
That's what Martha Stewart went to prison for. If they'll send Martha Stewart to prison for it, well, she was sent to prison more for lying to the investigation.
It's simply a civil issue where they come and take a lot of money.
Right.
And
she just lied in the process.
But once you lie to federal investigators about it, then it's time to go to prison.
Teach the prison staff how to cook properly and how to create doilies to put on the prison tables.
But I'm really quite happy that the SEC is on the job, and this is a case where your federal tax dollars are doing what they need to do, and I kind of like it, to say the least.
Something else happened this week.
Really? What else?
Well, one of the states was in a union or some such during, there was a speech.
Yes, but what else is about it?
Oh, that's a good question. Did you catch the State of the Union address?
Mm-mm.
No. Did you read the transcript?
No.
No? Wow. That's amazing.
Why?
Well, it just seems a little bit unusual that the president's coming out to say what his agenda is for the coming year. And
since when has the president's agenda had a lick of difference? I mean, as long as the House of Representatives is dominated by people that if the president turns left, they will turn right. If he turns right, they will turn left. It ain't going to happen.
Every major and minor piece of his agenda, and I can go down listing it off. Immigration reform.
Well, now in immigration reform, I think everybody's going to
There might be some in there, but that was one where he got both sides to say, okay, I think it's more the agenda of what's going on rather than the president's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said raising taxes, raising spending, raising the minimum wage. He wants to raise the minimum wage to $9. That's really dumb right now. You just go down a list of things that would be really, really bad to do. We just had a quarter of right on the teetering edge of shrinkage. And we have another one that we don't know about yet. And taxes just went up, and it's hitting the Walmart numbers.
The minimum wage is not going to go up because the Republicans in the House will block it.
And the gun control thing is not going to happen because the Republicans in the House are going to block it. And you just go down the list of higher taxes is not going to happen because the Republicans in the House will block it. If it ever gets to the Senate, it'll be filibustered.
Well, I read two very separate articles on this issue of spending and taxing.
When you say very separate, that means are they in completely separate magazines or?
Sort of. One of them is in Real Time Economics, and it was about it was actually a report of a study that had been done by a Nobel Prize winning economist.
Okay.
And then signed off on by a whole bunch of others, from both sides, left and right, and another report from the Congressional Budget Office, and which was cited in the journal. So they're actually very, very different positions. And it's really fascinating to read both sides of this argument and realize they're both completely correct. That's what's scary.
Both sides are correct.
Yes. The Congressional Budget Office said, in essence, that for the next 10 years, if we do nothing, in other words, if we basically, let's say we go with the current state of law, we go to sequestration, we leave the taxes low, but everything else pretty much hums along the way it's going.
Mm-hmm.
22 years from now, we'll be pretty much like Greece. Right now, by the way, the CBO officially
we're going to change our language?
So financially.
Oh, okay.
We're going to change
our financial language.
The Congressional Budget Office officially states, and I love it that we finally got an official number on this, the public debt of the United States, the government of the United States, is 76% of gross domestic product.
See, this is the true fact that we've been saying for a long time. Congressional Budget Office is agreeing with us.
Which means they're really smart.
Yeah, all of a sudden, they got brilliant.
And what they said was, for the next 10 years, on the present course with no law changes, we will do okay. Well, the economy will probably do well, and the deficit will not rise necessarily faster than the economy, or at least will remain under control, the total debt. However, it's beyond the 10-year point that things take off suddenly and violently, we have to act now to prevent that.
Medicare and Social Security just go really, really nasty looking.
And that's as far as it goes, and the Congressional Budget Office, it doesn't prescribe policy. It simply reports fact, and I think that's probably very good. Then this series of economists who did a very careful study said that they looked very carefully at what a failure – let's say we cut spending now.
Okay.
What they concluded – was that it would worsen our national debt substantially.
Yep. I tend to agree. This is what happened with Greece.
And so, I mean, we're not in a crisis, but the point is
they
said
we did crisis-level debt spending cuts, then we would put ourselves in a crisis.
Basically, they didn't come out and say it in these words. Sequestration, as it is written, will exacerbate the national debt.
Yes.
Which is just kind of stunning. Now, they said, on the other hand, if we approach this gradually over a 10-year period,
then it has a much better impact on it.
And they made the same point the Congressional Budget Office did, that A, taxes need to gradually rise over the next 10 years. and spending entitlements need to be reduced.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, now this was an interesting point. But most of our listeners, I presume, are relatively right of center Republicans.
See, that's why I don't listen to our program.
That's probably makes sense because yeah. I'm very much aware of the fact that I am a right of center Republican. I'm certainly not extreme, but even though Willie insists I'm a left-wing liberal communist something or another.
Yes, it's horrible.
I guess compared with him, maybe I am. I don't know.
I don't know.
But the point is that the economists and the Congressional Budget Office both agree, which is redundant.
Very strange.
If we leave taxes as low as they are, relative as a percentage, federal taxes as a percentage of GDP, we really don't have any means to fix the coming debt crisis that will occur about 10 years from now.
Yeah. Basically, the underlying issue here is the same underlying issue that Paul Ryan tried to address that didn't get a lot of support from the Democrats for some reason. And that a few years back, the Democrats were trying to address. Entitlement spending is going to go through the roof. There's just too many entitlements out there and too many people going to get them.
And it was interesting.
And not enough money for it.
Both agreed, by the way, that the most critical cuts have to come in Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Both
Absolutely.
Agreed that there is a committee that is formed under Obamacare, which, by the way, has not been constituted, that would identify areas where procedures were redundant or unnecessary that are being paid for today.
Mm-hmm.
That is the so-called death panel.
Yep.
And as a result, the Republicans who want to cut spending have killed, at least for the moment, any possibility of reducing Medicare expenditures significantly, because the panel that was set up to look at Medicare and reduce expenditures has now got a poison pill attached to it from the Republicans because it's called the death panel.
Yeah. There's some major issues involved here. Major issues. If you just look at the most simple fact, this is the way I do it, and people have regularly come to me and said, how did you know such and such was going to happen? When we talked about the mortgage crisis, the mortgage-backed security crisis back in 2006 and 2007, we said some things. We said mortgage-backed AAA securities, these bonds that people are buying like crazy, these high-yield AAA things, they don't make sense. They really don't make sense, and they're going to blow up in everybody's faces. We said that.
Yeah, and they were called collateralized debt obligation, CDOs or CMOs at the time, and that's what we were referring to.
Right, and people were saying, I'm doing great on this. And then a year later, people were saying, well, how did you know? And a year after that, everybody thinks that they knew before it happened. The way we know this, and when we're looking at Medicare, it's the same thing. If we're talking about a collateralized mortgage obligation, and it's AAA rated, and it's paying 8 or 9%.
Something wrong here.
Something's very wrong, because if you have AAA type credit, you're not, I mean, just think to yourself, if you're going to go right now to refinance your home and someone said, I will give you a 6% on that, you would say jump in a lake. You could get a 3% right now. And back then, 5% was the normal, and people were offering 8 or 9% on these AAA. Nobody in their right mind is going to take that. It's a very simple statement. Okay, I'm not going to take, with good credit, an interest rate that's that high. But when people are selling these bonds with good credit, with interest rates that high, something is wrong. With Medicare, it's very easy. All we have to look at is very simple census data. A lot of people are going to be getting Medicare very soon, and we don't have enough money to pay for it.
Are you trying to say that census data makes sense? We have a caller on 773-1400, by the way.
Yes, it makes lots of sense.
Can we go to the caller?
Yes.
Okay. Caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, I was a little bit curious about the one thing where government waste is, and right now my farmer friends tell me that 81% of the agricultural budget does not go to farmers. It goes to food stamps and taking care of the illegals, babies that are come here under the 14th Amendment.
Doesn't take care of illegals' babies.
But it does. Well, it does do food stamps.
The food stamps, yeah.
Oh, who takes care of that?
Well, let me tell you, the food stamps, if you're talking about feeding people, what happens is part of the agricultural budget, the United States buys food from farmers at above market prices so that they'll keep producing the food, even though it is not economical. If they move the farmers to the free market system, most of the small farmers would go out of business because the efficiencies of corporate farming are so far ahead of them. And we have food since the 1920s.
Well, where does
we've
the
had
81%
food surpluses.
Go?
Well, let me explain this. Just listen to the rest of what I'm saying here, okay? Just be patient with me a second. That's over on the supply side of the equation, but you got to have somebody to buy the food at the other end. The United States, the government buys a bunch of food, right? What's it do with the food?
Well,
in the 1920s, in the 1920s and 30s, they were burning it.
Beneficial is to them as you are painting it, right?
Well,
now,
let me go back to the 1920s when they started. Follow them through. Have you ever studied the whole agricultural department process?
Yes, I used to farm. I used to go over there and complain why in the heck I had to tell them what I was doing.
Sure, I'm saying if you studied the whole process, it started in the 1920s, actually in the 1930s. What happened was in the 1930s, the government would buy food from farmers and burn it.
Yep.
So that the farmers could stay in business and continue to grow food because we considered
kept the price up on the food.
Right. Yeah, we considered it to national security.
They come out and kill their cattle.
Yeah, they did because we simply couldn't.
I know all those horror stories. But I think in this day and time, I don't think that the farmers get quite a bit more. They really have a better insurance program now than what they had. Because I had the insurance one time and lost all my cotton down in Big Elm Creek, and they paid my premium.
Oh yeah, I got. I understand. I understand how the system works, and there's a lot of inefficiencies in it because of the Senate. And the reason is you have agricultural states. For instance, like Idaho, that has one representative in the House of Representatives, and he's not really fair because he represents fewer people than, let's say, John Carter does, but they got to have one representative per state. But they've got two senators. So the agricultural states are far, a farmer has far greater representation in Congress than anybody else does. And the government in the 1930s considered it, and I think correctly, that it was in the national security interest that we produce enough food to feed ourselves and not become dependent upon somebody else to produce our food.
Yeah, in the 1970s, we had a reversal in that the government started paying farmers more money to make food so that the food was cheaper, and then buying that at discount to sell. You know, if you look at the stickers on in the grocery store, the things that allow food stamps, it's based on that purchase.
And this is the point. Well, if the government government provides...
One guy at the 8th Street barbecue place had to go out of business because they changed the way food stamps are used.
Yeah, you can't go and
Pardon him, the guy that had to shut it down, they changed it where they can buy candy or anything like that now.
Well, the state of Texas did that.
Anyway, that's...
That was, by the way, remember...
Anyway, he's out now.
Well, if he was dependent upon food stamps, he probably needed to be out anyway.
Well,
all right.
I don't think all of it, but anyway. All right,
bye. Thanks for calling.
Well, basically, in answer to that, the agricultural department has in its... it's the one that sets...
Purview.
Yeah, in its purview. It sets the food stamps, what items can be bought and sold for food stamps.
And by the way, it devolved that to the states under George W. Bush.
Correct.
And the states now say what can and cannot be bought.
Except that the budget for the agricultural department, because they subsidize so much corn, they have a stock of corn and cheese that they have available, and companies that utilize that form, that either that cheese or that corn, their products become available for food stamps because the government spends less money on it than it would if it was something else because they already bought the corn from the farmer. Not that that is necessarily a good thing, but that's how part of the budget for – that's why the agricultural department has the budget for food stamps.
It really to the best of my knowledge, there are no food stamps, particularly in the state of Texas. The state of Texas very specifically does not issue food stamps or the cards to illegal aliens.
Correct.
So there's no illegal babies being supported on food stamps. Now, if that baby was born in the United States –
you can get WIC.
Then it is a U.S. citizen, and yes, there can be the cards for the Texas, whatever it's called. The point is that the federal government provides money. The state then has its matching money to provide this food, and what they can purchase was deregulated under George W. Bush and the Republicans, believing that the free market works better than restricting people. There are certain things that get special provisions. It's a pretty complex system. But the bottom line to it is they pay farmers a certain amount of money indeed, but what has happened is they provide artificial demand through what we used to call the food stamp program.
Mm-hmm.
The government provides artificial demand for certain kinds of food that raise the price for the farmers. Now, do they pay it directly to the farmers? No. 83% right goes to the point where they're buying food that the farmers are producing, and they're buying it on. They're giving people money to buy the food on the open market so they'll eat it, rather than the government burning it. And when somebody says, you know, 83% of the agriculture department money doesn't pay directly to the farmers, no, it doesn't. We don't pay farmers the whole agricultural department budget. Why would we? I mean, the issue is they're supposed to grow food and sell it.
Yeah.
Why should they pay it to the farmers? Yeah, they do pay farmers an awful lot of money when their crops fail. We got a break for commercials, though.
Yes, and we'll talk. We can talk more about that another time. I think it's kind of off subject, but yeah, we could definitely do that.
Part of the economy. We'll be back on the other side of these important words from whoever
sponsored
Town and Country. I think whatever it is that owns KTEM.
If you're
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I'm actually about to get the knobs in here pretty much all
figured out,
turned to the appropriate places where they're supposed to be.
Yes. We should take a picture of what the board looks like when we're in good shape, because they move. There's knobs and dials and switches all over it, and sometimes they'll just move one or two.
Well, yeah, but up here, somebody's adjusted the baseline, all these knobs over here, so I had to put them to different settings than we previously had. And it makes it interesting. It's kind of like trying to fly an airliner when you jump in and immediately take off and then figure out what switches have been set where and what's been adjusted.
Right.
And if you set the throttle to this level, it produces this much thrust, which is different from last week.
Right.
It's sort of an interesting, and you have to do this all on the fly to jump in here after the last show and get it all done. It's a challenge. It's sort of and that's why it's exciting.
Yes, it may not be at all exciting to the listener. They can go to taking naps as they hear us talk about numbers and geeky things, and we're trying to stay on our toes, figuring out which knob just...
You're on your toes. Is that what you call that thing you're sitting on?
No, my toes are on the ground. It's definitely on.
On?
Yeah.
Your toes are on?
I am on my toes.
You're on your toes. Anyway, 773-1400 is the telephone number to call if you're in East Bell County.
Otherwise, it's 1-866-597-1400.
And just strange sounds are coming out of my mouth.
Right. One of the things that I would recommend to the caller that was calling in earlier.
You recommend?
I would recommend that you go to the USDA.gov. They right. have their budget on there, and it's broken down as to how they spend it. And I'm not saying it's the right way to do it. I'm not saying it's the wrong way to do it. What we have said in the past, there was a wonderful tool at the Wall Street Journal that allowed us to tinker with the government's budget. Just to see what happens and see
you were tinkering with the budget.
Take
no wonder
some away
we've
from
got problems.
This to put it over there.
Yeah.
What happens? And I wish it was still available because it's not as simple as the USDA is spending its money the wrong way. Because then you have to say, all right, which part of it is it spending the wrong way? And every time you adjust it, somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, and it's. To say the least, a difficult process to figure out how to set the budget. And there is pretty much a consensus among economists.
Back to the census again. This is the consensus.
Unfortunately, the economists and the Congressional Budget Office agree on something, and that is we have a choice. We can either – we're going to see a – fundamentally, we need to have two things happen, and the Democrats are going to be angry about one of them, and the Republicans are going to be angry about the other one.
So we'll probably get some combination of both of those, so everybody's upset.
Well, we hope.
But also everybody wins.
We hope, but if the route to go, if we want to become economically like Greece in 22 years, is for the Republicans to get what they want and the Democrats to get what they want.
Yeah, if we just give more of what each of them wants, then we're in trouble.
And each of them is blaming the other one and angry at the other one. But the bottom line to it is, historically in the United States, the federal government has typically taken in about, since World War II, about 18% of the gross national product, gross domestic product. We're running along at about 16 right now. And if you look at the deficit, lo and behold, it's about 4% of the GDP. Whoa, what a surprise. The fact is that around 18% is what we call the Laffer point. It is the point where the governmental, the taxes, the spending, and everything associated with the government, that was loud. If that amount is taken out of the economy and used to run the government, and of course, it vast majority of that feeds back into the economy someplace.
Correct. Yep.
Then we tend to do very, very well. And those are the times when we've had the greatest prosperity and actually everybody has done relatively well at about 18%. We're currently running along at about 16%. Historically, when that happens, our debt levels rise and keep getting bigger.
And what's happening in the middle of this is that because the federal government is taxing lower than it has historically in boom times. I realize a lot of people are saying, but my taxes are horrible. What are you talking about? We're talking about federal income taxes. We're not talking about Social Security. We're not talking about the thing that we've recently seen change in our payrolls with the payroll taxes coming back up. We're talking about federal income tax. And if you look at the end of the year, at what you are, a lot of people are filing their taxes right now. Your effective tax rate, a lot of the software services will provide you that number on the summary sheet. When you're all done with everything, it'll say your effective tax rate. If you made this much money, the total amount you made, not the adjusted amount or all the other IRS mumbo jumbo, just look at the actual amount you made and the amount you spent in taxes. And what you'll find, amazingly, is that most of us fall between 13 and 18%, but the average for the United States is 16%. 18% is the historic norm. So we have an extremely complex system that gives us a little bit better than what we do historically. There's a problem, though. And this is, well, that's the problem is the federal government goes into a lot of debt. They want to keep spending. But on top of that, many states feel like the services that they need are not being provided by the government, the federal government. So they raise their taxes, they raise their sales and their income taxes. We see it right now in New York and California, where income taxes just went up and sales taxes just went up.
But people have the ability to leave there and come to Texas.
Right, and that's what's actually happening in droves right now. New York is shrinking. California is shrinking. California hasn't been a shrinking state before. It is now. And we're almost out of time. If you'd like to contact us off the air, you can reach us locally, 947-1111. That's voicemail, or 800-914-7526, or Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
And we'll be back next hour with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we actually have 5 seconds
yes,
left.
Yes, I was trying to
ourselves here.
Squeeze a bunch of stuff in there. And there we go.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.